when Christianity has now such a negative connotation, you have to ask yourself, how unfaithful have we been to the realities that we have been brought into, such that the world looks at us and instead of hearing and having this testimony, they have some other testimony. That the world may know that you have sent me. There's two reasons in this Lord's Prayer. This is the first one, that the world might know that you sent me into the world. In Acts, there's a couple of glimpses of what this might look like. Acts chapter 4. The apostles having preached and healing a man and then giving an answer when they were arrested. No, the one that says they took note that they had been with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 12.
12, yeah. 13. Yeah, and so they, with boldness, they preached. They were assaulted. They had to, been brought to before authorities. But look at the witness that was clear before the watching world. It says, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, they perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men. They marveled, but they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. This is Acts chapter 4, verse 13. What a image that I think sets before our eyes to realize, you know what? Jesus Christ did come into the world. In fact, the confession that Jesus Christ has come into the world is a very important confession, if you read 1 John. But what the world would see is when we live out the truth and endeavoring to keep this unity and we cross all of the divisive barriers to do it, the world says, man, something about those people and what's about those people. Not only that God is among them, but man, that God sent Jesus Christ and it's Jesus Christ that makes that difference in their lives. Skip down in chapter 4. And you'll see another one in terms of the larger audience, the larger impact that this had on the lives of the community. If you go down chapter 4, and someone can read verse 32 through 34. This is Acts chapter 4, verse 32 through 34.
Acts chapter 4, verse 32. Now the full number of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one said that any of the things that belonged to him was his own, but they had everything in common. And with great power the apostles were giving their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as were owners of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold.
35 as well, sorry.
35 as well. And laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need.
So first thing is, this is not a call to socialism. Okay? Breathe easy. But it's a demonstration at that time how this truth took hold of that multitude of those who believed. It's not a principle. It's not a mandate. It's just a historical reality of how these believers were so affected by what they had come to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. That affected their lives in such a way that no one claimed anything was his own, and they brought it all so that everyone could be a beneficiary of what they all had shared together. And so what I think about is that this was a glimpse and a historical snapshot of how that impacted that generation. And so there is the opportunity in every generation to reflect this truth of unity, this truth of being one. Remember, this gives witness to a world that we're really the followers of the Lord Jesus, and the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ did make a difference, does make a difference.
Brother Mark, I just noticed that in that context, verse 33, the key thing there was the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. It says, with great power, the apostles gave witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. The fact that the Lord Jesus has risen, and this is a reality to them, I think powered them to do what they were doing.
And this passage also, Mark started out by saying this is not Christian socialism. But actually it does illustrate something really powerful of what this unity is, because one reason we know that it was not Christian socialism is if we look in chapter 5, there was another sale of land. Ananias and Sapphira sold some land. They kept back some of the money for themselves, and they gave some money to the apostles. Even that was not the problem. It was, and this is the important point, verse 4, Acts 5, verse 4. While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your control? What they did was they lied about how much they were bringing. They wanted to get just as much credit or attention, perhaps, as Barnabas, who had sold a parcel of land and brought the entire proceeds to the apostles. They sold a parcel of land, kept some for themselves, but said they were giving all of it to the apostles. That was the lie. But what verse 4 is very important, because what it says to us is this scene of unity does not, again, we've said this a couple of other times this week, it does not eliminate individuality. So that in practice, as they are exercising or as they are making decisions in ways that illustrate this unity, this real unity in heart, in the giving of the first century, like in 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, where giving is explained, it talks about how it pleased, let's say, there's a place where it talks about it pleased the poor saints of Macedonia to make a contribution for those in Jerusalem. And it says, and it makes sense, I'm paraphrasing, it makes sense because the people of Macedonia have been the beneficiaries of spiritual blessings. And so it makes sense that the people of Jerusalem are beneficiaries of material blessings. There's an exchange. And the whole idea is that there's this mindset of we're all together. We're all in this together. And if I have some stuff and I can get rid of my stuff because it would help you, it's completely up to me on the one hand. Christian unity is not Christian socialism where the, you know, there's this head organization which tells everybody exactly what to do and makes us into robotic kinds of people. We are used as who we are. We're used individually. And at the same time, we are taught by the Spirit of God to display love even in our sharing of material things. And so although, as Mark said, it's not a prescriptive passage, it is a passage which illustrates something that should still be carried on in principle, which is my stuff is not just my stuff. I could use my stuff to the glory of God for fellow believers.
So let's go back to John 17 and look at some additional things that the Lord prayed for when he prayed for the larger following of him, who would believe in him. Sure.
Just a short remark. That we could understand what's at stake here. In John 5, it speaks of, the Lord speaks of three things that bear witness that the Father had sent him to the world. It was the works that the Father had given him to do, the Father himself, and, the scriptures. So it's an amazing thing that we, in practicing this unity, that we can really bear witness to that the Father sent the Son today. And just thinking about Philemon yesterday, what a testimony it was that this master should welcome his slave again. Mm-hmm. In those days, he might have had him killed or something, mm-hmm. but to welcome him with open arms, what a testimony. And also that there are no Greeks and no Jews. In Ephesians 2, we read that that the Lord Jesus killed the hostility or the enmity. Mm-hmm. I don't think we realize today just what separated the Jews from the nations, but it was really real hostility, and Lord Jesus erased that.
Mm-hmm. And so back in John 17, verse 22, he says, "And the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one." And so the same prayer for the disciples earlier, that they might be one, even as we are, the Lord adds that to us. But he adds another layer to it. He says, there's a glory connected with it. There's a glory connected with it because what has God done for the Lord Jesus? He has glorified him, and he has glorified him as a man. He ever existed in that eternal relationship with the Father, but now he is raised up and elevated as a man, and he says that distinction, that he has that intimate communion with me still as a man, he says that glory is the glory that will now be a part of manifesting this oneness amongst those who believe in me. It's really kind of mind-blowing to realize that this is a very privileged position. This is a very privileged opportunity. And we often skip it or avoid it because it might cause us a little discomfort, or we are not willing to make and to stand out and to be different and to be countercultural with regards to how we treat those who look, talk, and come from a different place than us.